The United States has had more than 350 mass shootings this year, as defined and tracked by the Gun Violence Archive. High-profile mass shootings are leaving some people, including school children, fearful about a shooting in their own hometown or school. Our next guest is a psychologist who says there are ways to help kids and adults deal with that kind of anxiety. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this a problem you've run into, a concern, an anxiety you've run into with your kids? Do you wonder how to talk to them when events like mass shootings, especially ones at schools, are in the news? What are you talking about as you head into back-to-school season? Teachers, do you have this concern for yourselves, or do you run into concerns from parents or children at school? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Travis Wright is an associate professor in the Department of Counseling Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, specializing in early childhood education and teaching students who have experienced trauma. Travis, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, this isn't just about kids, this kind of anxiety, of course. Travis, can you talk about some of the common emotions people might feel, not even talking about the people who directly experience these events, but those of us who follow them, who see them in the news?
So, you know, we're all stressed. I think that the mass shootings are happening against the broader context of stress. The political system is sort of uncertain. We are in the midst of a global pandemic with potentially another sort of pandemic on the rise. And so I think people generally are stressed. Our baseline is heightened. And so mass shootings are occurring sort of against a backdrop of stress that people are already feeling. And so I think that shootings only heighten the stress that we're already feeling and actually can be something that we can sort of become fixated or focused on because it actually feels a little more concrete than some of the other stressors that we're facing. So I think it can, you know, many of us are probably being impacted by stress in lots of different ways. We may find that we're having trouble sleeping. We may be shorter tempered. We may be having a hard time concentrating and focusing. We may find less meaning in things that used to bring us joy. We may be overeating. We may be undereating. We may have trouble sort of making plans and following through on things. So these are all signs of stress. Some people become hypervigilant, and so they can't stop thinking about it. So you may find that you have children or friends or family members who are just talking about mass shootings all the time. You may have other people who just seem more numb and they're not actually dealing with the stress that they're feeling. They sort of shut down. So stress can look very different. People experience stress very differently. They have different ways of manifesting it, but I think it's safe to assume that everyone is feeling the heat sort of increasing in the pressure cooker right now.
Now, after a horrific event like the Uvalde shooting in Texas back at the end of the last school year, we're coming to a new school year now. What in particular can parents watch for in their kids who may not, you know, just volunteer or speak up that particular event is making them feel bad, but it might be there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think parents should be curious about any types of changes in their children's behavior, particularly trouble sleeping. Younger children may start bedwetting after having not bedwetted for a while, nightmares, kids who are having anxiety about separating from their parents. You may find that your children are having just more distress when they have to be out of your presence. They may not want to leave you to go to school or to go do other things that they used to enjoy. Kids may be engaged in repetitive play when they're really traumatized. They may be playing the same thing over and over. And so if you notice that your kids are playing games about guns, games about violence, games about shooting or being shot over and over again, and it just feels like it isn't very organized or it doesn't feel very low stress, those would be some typical signs that your children might be stressed. But I would say avoidance, lethargy, acting sort of just less interested in daily things are all other kind of signs that you might watch out for as well. Trust your gut. If you're not sure how your child is doing, just ask.
I imagine the answer to this will vary depending on the age of kids. But when there is a traumatic event in the news and you're pretty sure your kid's going to come across it one way or another, what are some strategies to open up healthier conversations with those kids?
Yes, absolutely. So research shows that kids tend to cope better when they hear about things at home rather than at school or from friends or the media themselves. And so as parents and as guardians, when we know that something has happened that our children are likely to be concerned about or likely to hear about, it's best to bring it up first so that they hear it from us rather than other sources. So the first thing we can do is just to name it and ask children if they've heard about it. The second most important thing that we should do when talking to kids about difficult topics is listen. Ask kids what they know about it, ask what's on their mind, ask how they're feeling about it. Listening helps them feel connected. It helps them feel heard. It also gives us a sense of how they're making sense of the event so that we can tailor our responses to sort of how they're processing it. Sometimes kids are worried or worry in a very different way about something than adults because it might affect them differently or they may have a different perspective on the experience. And so when we assume how the children are feeling and we start talking about how things may be for them from our own experience, sometimes we raise questions in their mind that they weren't even thinking about, so we might actually heighten their worry. And other times they just don't feel like we're really paying attention or clued into what's going on with them, that we're making it more about us than about how they're doing. So listening, I would say, is the other most important strategy.
Talking to Travis Wright, associate professor in the Department of Counseling Psychology at UW-Madison, looking at how to help people, kids in particular, cope with news of bad events. Thinking in particular of school shootings as we look ahead to back to school time here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a question for our guest, an experience maybe in having this kind of conversation with your kid, if you're a parent, with your classroom, if you're a teacher. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Travis, I think a tough thing to negotiate can be, you know, shootings that we see in the news. These are real and they're scary, but at the same time, even though they're in the news, we see them a lot, in the scope of things, they're pretty rare. Kids are still pretty safe at schools by and large. How do you acknowledge the one thing and that reality of mostly pretty safe places in the other?
Yes. So one thing that we can do is just to make sure that children have that information. So we should share with them that it's actually really rare, that it doesn't happen very often, that most children will never experience anything like this, and explain that the media tends to cover things that are outrageous or things that may be less common. And so even though you're hearing about it a lot, it doesn't mean that it happens a lot. I think the second thing that we can do is actually limit children's exposure to media during times of crisis and really scary things. Children do often hear more than they can process, or when they hear the same thing over and over again, it can heighten their anxiety level and also make it really hard for them to escape it so that they can begin to cope. So I think, you know, letting children know what's happening, making sure that we're having conversations with them to see how they're understanding it, giving them really good information so that we can help them contextualize the likelihood that they're going to experience the event themselves, and also limit their exposure to media, are all things that we can do to help them begin to cope and feel safer.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Linda is with us in Madison. Linda, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have been hearing a lot of hypotheticals and memories and what ifs, but I have a friend in Texas who picked up her 14-year-old niece from school. And of course, given that the child is 14, she has been doing active shooter drills her entire school career. So she's very accustomed to planning for this sort of thing. But as her aunt was driving her home from school, they stopped to get gas at a gas station, and they saw a man by his car carrying a big rifle. And the 14-year-old girl began shaking all over and then crying and vomiting. So I'm thinking of the visceral bodily response in children that may be in the moment, that is a little bit beyond what you're talking about, the fears and the hypotheticals. But this is, what would your guest suggest for a situation that is so very immediate and visceral?
Linda, thanks for the call. Travis, do you have some thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. So in that moment, I think that it's really important to help the child feel grounded, sort of ask them to come into their breath, to sort of, you know, breathing is one of the ways that we can help regulate our body so that we start to feel control over it. What your guest, what Linda was sharing, was this really painful experience of her niece sort of having a traumatic reaction. Sort of in that moment, we were seeing her come undone in a certain way, because this fear that she had been programmed to be afraid of was suddenly potentially coming true, or certainly that fear was being triggered. And so in that moment, we basically feel unsafe. We feel threatened for our lives. And so the most important thing we can do in that moment is to, one, ensure that the person is safe, and to help them realize it. So focusing on the breathing, helping them to sort of feel their body in the car, getting them away from the situation so that they aren't in close proximity to the trigger anymore. But certainly that type of reaction points to the fact that this young woman is really struggling to feel safe. And so I would say that when we see that type of reaction, it's also important to reach out for professional help to make sure that the child has the coping skills that she needs to navigate these really scary things. You know, obviously being closer to the event in proximity. So living in Texas, knowing that these things can happen, already experiencing sort of warnings and being made aware of the danger of these types of threats for her whole life, it sort of was a recipe for this type of reaction. And so I think making sure that she gets the appropriate support to cope is really important. In that moment, I think helping her just feel safe and grounded, and helping her get to safety would be the sort of the acute response. The other thing I would say is, and Linda brought up a really good point about preparing sort of for preparing her entire lifetime for just this type of threat. You know, the research actually suggests that maybe these active shooter drills are causing far more anxiety than they may be benefiting children. And so given that, you know, some of the public health researchers now are actually questioning whether or not children should be doing these types of drills, or how often we should be doing these type of drills, because it does actually lay the foundation for just this type of fear.
Linda, thanks for that call. We're talking to Travis Wright, associate professor in the Department of Counseling Psychology at UW-Madison, looking at how to manage fear and anxiety related to mass shootings, especially focusing on kids and back to school time. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. Have you had these conversations with your own kids, your own students? Have you seen anxiety in kids you work with or kids in your lives related to these shootings? What questions do you have for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Travis Wright, associate professor in the Department of Counseling Psychology at UW-Madison, with us today to talk about fear and anxiety some people may experience following a mass shooting, what can be done to help deal with that fear, especially when it comes to kids in schools. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a student worried about school shootings? How has news affected you over the years? If you're a parent or teacher, what kind of conversations do you have with kids about these things? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Travis, I know a lot of your work involves kids who have trauma, whether a long-term thing in their daily lives or have experienced acute trauma, and how it affects their learning in the classroom. How can teachers help kids in those situations learn?
Yeah, absolutely. So trauma makes it very hard to learn. When we're worried for our lives, when we're scanning the environment, wondering what's going to go wrong next, it's very difficult to focus on things like math and reading and remembering sort of historical facts. So in order for kids who've experienced trauma to actively engage the curriculum and to learn, it's really important for them to feel safe and also respected. And so some things that teachers can do are making sure that there are consistent routines, making sure that there are schedules that kids know what's going to happen, that there are clear procedures and processes in the classroom. And increasingly in my own work, I'm learning that trauma not only affects the way kids feel at school, but it actively impacts the way that they process information and learn as well. So for example, kids that are developing in the midst of challenging circumstances where scary things seem to happen out of nowhere often don't develop a sense of cause and effect. So they sort of walk through the world and things just happen. So as they're processing information, they don't necessarily connect that information to each other in a logical way. And so as teachers, it's really important to sort of point out the connections between narratives. This happened and that happened and this happened, to really point out cause and effect relationships so that kids begin to make connections between sort of what happened before and what's happening next and then what's going to happen as a consequence. That not only helps children learn better, but it also helps reinforce the idea that there is actually some logic and some reason and some predictability in the world. And I think that both helps kids learn better, but it also helps them begin to feel more regulated and safe and stable as well. When we've experienced scary things, it changes the way that we view the world. And so anything that we can do to help things feel like they make more sense helps individuals and especially children begin to heal from traumatic experiences.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Rich is with us in Burlington. Rich, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I really appreciate your guest bringing up the fact that the active shooter drills and all that can be creating more stress. I'm a retired school teacher. I taught high school science. One of the things I taught was chemistry. And anytime we did explosions, which is really the whole point of teaching chemistry, but anytime we did explosions, we had to let everyone know that this was coming, this is going to happen. We didn't level a building or anything, but just some of the typical stuff that's done in chemistry classroom because it was stressful. I taught through the years when Columbine occurred, and it was years before we had anywhere near full attendance in our school on the anniversary date of Columbine. And I really ascribe that to much of the overhype of school shootings. And I'm not saying school shootings don't happen and they're not tragic. I absolutely believe that. But if you were to look at the total negative effect on all of the kids in the country and the stress and the suicide rate among young people is way up. The stress of the training and the active shooter drills where we had kids huddled in the corner and we're throwing desks against the doors. And we had SWAT teams walking down the hall just to simulate. And that stress, I am sure total effect had to be far in excess. And I'm not downplaying a real school shooting.
I gotcha, Rich. Thanks for the call. And Travis, that gets back to some what you were talking about earlier, some pushback on the idea that these active shooter drills are a net plus.
That's it. I really appreciate Rich's perspective as an insider to the school experience. And I think one of the things that we have to keep in mind when we're deciding how to address issues in particular communities is that maybe a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work. The reality is that there are different levels of risk in different communities. The type of support and the type of intervention and the level of risk in one place may be very different than the risk in another place. In communities with high rates of violence, it's important for children to know how to keep themselves safe and what the procedures are. And if they don't know that information, it feels more scary. But in contrast, in communities where the risk may be pretty low or children haven't experienced or been exposed to violence, discussions of violence can actually heighten their anxiety. And so I think when we make decisions about what's best for children, we have to remember that schools are local, that they happen in neighborhoods, that they happen in communities. And so we should be talking with kids and teachers in those communities about what they need. Far too often, we sort of politicize the school environment and we sort of make policies based on what would make us feel better or what we think should happen. But many times this isn't aligned with what kids and teachers in that particular school need. So I think really being in touch with how kids are feeling, how teachers are feeling, how families are feeling, and tailoring the supports that we provide is critical.
Thanks for that call, Rich. Time for one more caller. Kathy's with us in Madison. Kathy, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm concerned that we are talking about this like it is accepted. And this is just the way it is. It's like, okay, we have one more degree of Celsius heat. So that's the way that is. We're not doing much about that either. But why aren't we talking about changing?
Kathy, we're just about out of time, but Travis, I know that's important to you. People can kind of take control in some ways by becoming active on issues. In our last few moments, can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that is most traumatizing to us is feeling powerless and out of control. And so I agree with your caller that when we accept violence as a part of life and we send our children to school worrying that they're not going to be safe, that's just a recipe for feeling fearful and anxious and out of control. So one of the things that we can do as parents, as community members, as grandparents, and as students is we can speak up about the policies that we would like to change to make our schools safer. You know, meaningful gun control, for example, if that's something that your family believes would help. I think being involved at the social level and helping feel like you're having an impact on what's happening around you helps you feel more agency, which ultimately helps you feel safer in the end.
Kathy, thanks for that call. And Travis, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Travis Wright, associate professor in the Department of Counseling Psychology at UW-Madison. He specializes in early childhood education and teaching students who have experienced various forms of trauma.